And today, from Logan Health, we have thoracic surgeon Dr. Luis Alberton. Good morning, Dr. Alberton.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Now, we've all pronounced it differently. Thoracic?
That's correct, actually. Thoracic surgery.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And it has nothing to do with the thorax, or does it?
It has everything to do with the thorax.
Okay, but not the one that Dr. Seuss was talking about. This is a different one. So we look forward to learning about it. Tell us a little bit about your background.
So I'm actually a Brazilian and left Brazil a long time ago and went to actually school in Monterrey, Mexico. Lived there for 7 years. And then after that, I was in New York for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I trained in general surgery. I'm a general surgeon. And then I subspecialized in cardiothoracic surgery. However, my practice has kind of been more narrow. And pretty much now what I do is mostly robotic lung surgery and some stomach esophageal surgery.
Wow.
And the robotics are getting to be a bigger part of everything you guys do. And it presents opportunities, but it also presents some challenges.
Yeah, I mean, robotic surgery has been around for a long time, actually, but it has been gaining more acceptance amongst different specialties. Mm-hmm. And now, the biggest advantage is that we can provide the same surgery. The operation on the inside is exactly the same, but we can do it throughout very small incisions.
So that makes recovery quicker, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, chance of complications such as like a blood transfusion, the length of stay in the hospital is much shorter, time to recover is much faster, patients can go back home to their family.
No. So now the thorax, that includes the lungs and the heart?
So the thorax is another word for the chest, mm-hmm. anything between the neck and the belly. So a cardiothoracic surgeon will operate anything, you know, including the heart, the lungs, the esophagus, chest wall, ribs. Now, mm-hmm. the way that my practice has evolved, I pretty much stopped doing any heart surgery and have just dedicated in lung surgery and surgery of the esophagus.
Mm-hmm. So now some of the other specialists at the hospital also use robotic surgery. So that's why you're specializing in one area now, I'm guessing.
That's correct. So the way that most surgeries have been evolving is that instead of having one surgeon knowing a little bit about many operations, you have several surgeons knowing a lot about a few operations.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about lung cancer here, but I'd like to get your expertise on COPD.
So COPD is a chronic disease. Now, it used to be known as emphysema and chronic bronchitis. And now we lump them both together because many times you have a different extent of different processes, right? So. Mm-hmm. And certainly is a result mostly from smoking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, as John mentioned, COPD, my father had emphysema. He was a lifelong smoker. What can be done? Is there a surgical procedure for that? Because I thought that was the lung's inability to expel the bad oxygen, right?
So that's correct. I mean, COPD, there is no cure for COPD. Once it's established, it's going to be there. There are certain measures you can use to prevent the progression. And the only time that a surgery plays a role in COPD is when there's a complication from COPD, such as a lung collapse or other problems like that.
Mm. Now, my dad had it too, but he was a Kalispell firefighter. Before they had the good smoke masks, and they would go into buildings, and boy, they breathe that smoke, and they come out, and it eventually got him.
Yeah. I mean, that's correct. I mean, we all think about cigarette smoking, but no, some patients just from growing up or living in a polluted environment, mm-hmm. that can lead to COPD as well and lung problems.
So let's start talking about lung cancer. You know, I'm just thinking about how your odyssey for getting from Brazil here to Kalispell, Montana, that must have been quite a cultural change for you.
Yeah, it has been interesting. Now, I don't want to get off track, but it has been series of mishappenings that led me here for the best. Yeah, yeah, very happy. Okay. Very happy.
Now, as far as the climate differences, no snow in Brazil, is
there? No, not at all. First time I saw snow, it was probably like 19 or 20.
Okay. I'm wondering now, did you learn your trade in English or in Portuguese?
In Spanish, actually.
Spanish?
Yeah, it's interesting because I was living in Mexico for 7 years and went to medical school over there, which it, no, don't realize that until after the fact, but it was an excellent medical school. And then I did some research in Houston in actually, you know, in heart disease. And it really had to learn English when I went to Houston.
Well, that kind of English.
Exactly.
Y'all.
Okay, lung cancer. This is nothing to joke about. This seems to be more and more prevalent than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Now, it's one of the, it's one of, it is the leading cause of cancer death. Mm-hmm. So now we hear a lot about the prostate cancer, about breast cancer, colon cancer, but in fact, lung cancer kills more patients than all of those combined.
Well, breathing is kind of fundamental.
It is.
Yeah. So what can we do to decrease the odds of getting lung cancer?
So when you think about lung cancer, I think there's two main purposes or two main objectives. One is to prevent the disease. Uh-huh. And cigarette smoking certainly has been a factor contributing to or promoting patients for having lung cancer. So not smoking or quit smoking is probably the first priority. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is early diagnosis. Mm-hmm. If you can catch lung cancer early enough, we have different tools, which is surgery is one of them, that you can actually cure patients.
Okay, now what about vaping? You know, for a while we were hearing a lot about vaping, and it was a safer way of taking in, you know, I guess
nicotine.
Have you learned more about that, or is that a problem?
So I don't think the evidence for vaping is as strong as for cigarettes. But now, my take on this is that nothing but clean air should be going to your lungs.
Okay, there's the recommendation.
Well, that brings us to another point. I've known people who have never smoked in their entire life and yet get lung cancer. How does that happen?
So that's correct. And there is some actually genetic mutations that can predispose patients that have never smoked to lung cancer. The reality is that about most cancers, there's so much that we still don't know. So now I'm sure as technology and research progress, we'll learn more about those. But you're correct. I mean, smoking is the most common no contributing mm-hmm. factor, but there's patients that have never smoked and will have a lung cancer.
Now, yeah. I was subjected to secondhand smoke when I was a kid. My dad smoked. We go deer hunting.
Everybody went
smoking in the car,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. And I didn't like it. But and then I lived in Los Angeles for about 8 years, and I heard that, you know, the smog was so bad in Los Angeles, it was like smoking a pack a day or something like that. So some of the environmental things might contribute too.
You're absolutely correct. So just like for COPD, sometimes living in a polluted environment or being constantly exposed to, you know, fumes or smoke, even if it's not from cigarette per se, now will increase your odds. For secondhand smoking, I think the biggest challenge is to quantify how much is that exposure. But I think nobody would doubt that, no, that's not good for you.
These environmental things that contribute to lung cancer, what sorts of things would they may be that we can avoid?
Well, some things are avoidable and some are not. Mm-hmm. Now, one other big contributor is asbestos exposure. Mm-hmm. We also think about asbestos being one of the main causes of something called mesothelioma, which is not lung cancer per se, it's in the lining of the lung. But we do know that the patients that have smoked and been exposed to asbestos, they potentiate each other. So the risks of lung cancer are even higher.
Okay.
And then there's radon and other things that in the environment that it could increase your chance of lung cancer as well.
I happen to think one of the environmental things that are really beyond our control is each summer season, the wildfires. And we get different degrees of smoke in. And the recommendation is usually for people with asthma or health-related problems to stay inside, limit activity. Is that the best-case scenario when we have that particulate and smoke in the air for everybody?
Yeah, I mean, if you can't avoid, some things are unavoidable.
Yeah.
But if you can't avoid being exposed to, you know, smoke, I think when it's in the environment, it makes it much harder. But yes, especially if you have lung problems such as COPD, as we discussed before, being exposed to smoke can trigger an exacerbation.
Okay, so we regularly have the alerts when we have, fire problems, smoke from mm-hmm. Canada and outside and all converging here. But now as far as, we're going to talk about how to treat lung cancer, but as far as preventing it, what type of a mask would be recommended for somebody if they do have to be out in this environmental smoke when we have smoky conditions?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the perfect answer for that, but I think a mask to actually prevent smoke from the environment has to be I don't think just a little mask we use in the hospital, even N95, all would right. be fully effective to prevent that.
So this particulates in the air must be really fine,
yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Well,
so what about treatment? That's the thing.
How do we treat lung cancer?
So that's a good question. Before I actually jump to that, I'd like to say that the biggest challenge for lung cancer is that it doesn't give you symptoms until it's very advanced. So many patients that won't have any symptoms, if they have risk factors such as smoking, they should be getting a lung cancer screening looking for lung cancer. And that has been shown to be the biggest game changer that it will allow us to treat patients with surgery and potentially cure them.
Okay, now if somebody comes in for a checkup because their family history or whatever, what is the how do you stop it? I mean, what's the earliest detection? Is it really minute when you stop it or what?
So you have CT scans these days, and they can capture nodules that are like in the millimeters range of size. So that's when we want to detect these cancers. Now, because if you detect early enough, that's is when we can really do minimally invasive surgery safely and get those patients going.
Okay, now I had done a search while we were talking here because I had heard it one time that the lung can regenerate itself, but I would guess that has to be when there's minimal invasion. Am I correct there?
Yeah, so what happens is that if you have healthy lungs and you take a part of the lung, as much as half mm-hmm. of the lung sometimes, it doesn't regenerate like the liver, for example, but the remaining lungs will kind of re-expand and fill up the space. And when you look at an X-ray or CAT scan, you can hardly even tell the patient had surgery.
Wow.
That is
so
great.
Now let's talk about this surgery. How invasive does it have to be?
So when we do robotic, it's much less invasive than it used to be. We still do open surgery a few times. But now for the majority of patients that are at home either 1, 2, or 3 days after surgery, they're up and walking the day of surgery. And if they have good lung capacity, they can pretty much go back to hunting, skinning up the mountain, and going back to normal life.
Wow.
That is great news.
Yeah. So is this an outpatient procedure?
No.
I didn't think so.
It might be in the future, like many other surgeries that before traditionally were inpatient, now they're outpatient. But for lung surgery, most patients would spend at least overnight stay in the hospital, and but in average, about 2 or 3 days.
So the key here, circling back around, the key here is be tested, find out soon if you have it, and deal with it immediately.
Correct. If you have any risk factors, you should see your primary care physician and discuss your risk factors and see if you need a CAT scan.
Okay, now we've talked about robotic surgery. You have a free demonstration coming up, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So for the last few years, even before I moved to Montana, every November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month, And we'll have an event tomorrow from 2:30 to 4 o'clock.
2:30 to 4, okay.
All right.
And where will that be, and how can people participate?
So that's in the Buffalo Hills Conference Room, the main entrance from the hospital. And then we have a few talks about smoke cessation, about screening, and about lung surgery itself. We'll have both robots over there, one for diagnosis and one for treatment of lung cancer. And the general public are invited. And you have even a chance to sit in the robot and see how that works. Yeah,
wow.
It's has been quite entertaining to see even kids and patients with no medical training to sit over there and see how the machine works.
Now, is this one of those deals where you put your hands in the gloves or something? And
that's correct. I mean, you are operating from the distance. You have your hands in the in the machine, and every motion you do with your hand, it mimics inside the patient's body.
Okay.
But with very small instruments.
2:30 to 4 tomorrow afternoon, and they just show up, be there on time?
Yeah, they can just show up in the main entrance. They will have, like, you know, signs, and they can just ask the front desk where to go. And again, it's open to the public. It's just to bring awareness about, you know, how important lung cancer is and what we can do to change the outcome.
All right. Gosh, this has been a great conversation and shedding a light on lung cancer. Dr. Luis Albertan, thank you so much.
Thank you.